In the first of the two interviews with Kitty Hart-Moxon, we heard a little about her experiences in the concentration camps, including, of course, Auschwitz, and on the Death March, both of which she and her mother amazingly survived, although sadly her father and brother and many other members of her family perished. Now, much of this story is recorded in her two books, I Am Alive and Return to Auschwitz, as well as in various TV and film documentaries. Many of them are available today through YouTube. She's also done countless press and radio interviews. Now, in her first interview for us last week, Kitty spoke about the early period after her survival, the difficulties she had in getting people to listen after she came to England, and then the realisation by many that the story of what happened to the Jews of Europe in the Holocaust had to be told, and that we had to listen so that it could never happen again. We closed the first interview at the point when two members of the House of Lords had resolved that education about the Holocaust should be included in the national curriculum and that Kitty herself should be involved.
We got it into the national curriculum and that actually started the ball rolling. Again, it was difficult because of the funding. Because it wasn't funded by the government. It was a charity. We had to fundraise, get some money together to do these projects. And one of the first things we did was called the LFA project, which is Lessons from Auschwitz project. It's still going on. And well, we take two students from every single school in the country, six formers, get them together on a regional basis, send them to Auschwitz for the day because we can't keep them overnight. It's not possible. You know, it's too expensive. And they need to be more than one day, but we can't do it. So we had no money for that, but we did manage to fundraise to do that. And now we have government funding.
Was the visits, the lessons from Auschwitz, was that the first thing that the Trust did, or did it...?
No, it wasn't the first. First was, outreach programme, going into schools, speaking in schools, and it was easier
to do. So once you establish it's on the curriculum, you can then help teachers to know how to teach it?
We had to teach the teachers, because the teachers were not taught anything. They were a generation that had missed out. We've still got teacher training programmes now. Because the teachers are simply not... Well, it's better now than it was, but I'm talking about the 80s. So we got teacher training, and we got outreach programs, all different programs to do with education, concentrating primarily on the GCSE. You know, 14-year-olds, year 9, we try. Because I'm going to school on Friday. I'd like to do year 9 of 14-year-olds. They're now working on a primary, and of course, the bigger ones, the ones on the lessons to Auschwitz, we take older ones, we take six formers. And we've taken some 40,000 people, imagine, to Auschwitz. And plane load takes, well, we also take other people, you know, MPs, we always take MPs or VIPs. So it's been our most successful project. And I must give it to Gordon Brown. He gave the first money, and it's been increased, which it needs to be year by year. It costs more. So that's what I started doing next. And I used to go. Well, I don't go anymore because, you know, you're up 24 hours and I can't do that anymore. But I have been on several trips. It's very, very punishing, believe you me. Because you leave first thing in the morning and you come back very late at night. And we had to hire a plane. The plane waits and brings the students back because you can't have an empty plane. It's all the logistics that go with it. So that's what we do at HET. The next thing that happened, I did another program. And that I did was, there was a new Holocaust Centre opened up, Beth Shalom. I don't know if you've been there, near Nottingham. Well, it's now called the National Holocaust Centre and Museum. They've just got the national status. That was just one family that started this project in their farmhouse, and that's why it is outside Nottingham, not far from Newark. And it's very, very successful. That was my next thing. Nothing to do with the Trust. Completely different project. I started working with them. They called themselves Beth Shalom. So Stephen, who was the chair, who started it as a young boy, he and I used to have a travelling exhibition. He had an exhibition on my story, and we used to go around the schools. And I still go up there. It's quite difficult to get up there. And he is now the big boss of the Shoah Foundation in Los Angeles. And I come to that because I did a last film with him last year. So the next thing I did was the BBC film in the Midlands to do the Death March, a programme after Auschwitz, what happened after I was evacuated. I was on death march where I worked and in a shut train and 7 days in the open coal trucks, all that to liberation. I did called the death march program. I did
just for those listeners who don't know what a death march is. This is where, as the Allies approached, the Germans wanted to keep the labor. Is that?
Don't ask me why they had to take people on death marches. It was total chaos. They did this with the POWs. They marched them from place to place. It was no purpose whatsoever. So yes, there were these death marches all over Germany. And again, this program had never been done and it's never been actually explained. So then I did the program with Blue Peter. I took them to Auschwitz for the smaller children. And then I did Country File. They did a program, so I went with John Craven from BBC, who still does Country File now. So he and I went. He narrated the Deathmatch program for me, in fact. And then I did a big program with Belfast, with Northern Ireland, Stephen Nolan, he's a BBC. So I did a big program with them. And then came the Imperial War Museum, which is another project. Of course, they did the Holocaust exhibition. And if you go around the exhibition, you actually see me on the screen. I think a few of us survivors were involved with that exhibition. I think they're just redoing it now. So that was a big project. And then last year, no, it's more than that now, it's probably 18 months or so, I went with Dr. Stephen Smith, who is now the Shoah Foundation executive director and professor at the University of Southern California. And he and I met up in Auschwitz, and Steven Spielberg funded this particular film. He donated the money to do it because we had a film crew from Hollywood arrived. And we did another project, and I took two girls from a local school, one from a local school and one girl, which was the daughter of Stephen Dalton, and she came. So I took the two girls who were more or less my age when I was there, and we did another film called One Day in Auschwitz, and that was seen in 200 countries last year. We're still waiting for it to come here. I think that they've distributed it via the Discovery Channel. So that's the latest thing I have done.
The Shoah Foundation, I think it was set up originally to record the testimony of survivors. And you have done that yourself?
Yeah, not only have I done it. Mine is one of the few that's actually on the internet. They've got 53,000 these testimonies. And what? It was done in all these countries. And now they're trying to redo them and perhaps put them in one language. I don't exactly know what they're trying to do, but that's I think that was the aim, because with all these languages, you know, it probably wasn't so good. So they're redoing this now, and they're doing new things now, because the survivors, we know what's happening. People are dying off, you know, and although we've done the testimonies, that is new technology. And there's these holograms. And I have, a few months ago, done with the Holocaust Center, I've done this new hologram, which really, in 3D, and like a futuristic. They wanted me to go to Los Angeles to Shoah Foundation to do it, but I decided that there's got to be a way of doing it here. And they found the studio in Luton where we managed to do it. So I've done it, yeah.
Going back to the trust, one of the things that the trust I read has now moved on to is the ambassador program.
Oh, the ambassador, yeah. You know, we've tried all kinds of things. We've done the second generation, trying to get, like, my sons involved, like the second generation involved. And we found, it wasn't all that good with some people, because some of the descendants didn't really know, their parents didn't tell them exactly what happened to them. That was a main issue. And it actually caused an issue between generations. Didn't happen to me, because my kids were brought up in it, you know, because we had all this publicity. Mm. And also, my mother lived with me. We used to bring it up, not the horror, but we used to bring up stuff during mealtimes. You know, if the kids didn't want to eat, you would say, you know, you'd be glad to have a piece of bread kind of thing. If they didn't want to go to bed, we would say, oh, aren't you lucky you've got a bed? You know, so these kind of things we would bring it in. And my kids never had a problem, my sons. But there are second generations that have big problems. And so we found that using the second generation to teach wasn't always good. My son's pretty good. He stood in for me. He can do it. But there are others that can't do it. So we've tried not to do that. And we were thinking, how can we progress, you know? And well, the next thing was to get some of these students that come, the outreach, when we do the outreach program, oh, that go on to the LFA, that really, really become interested to take it further. That was the problem. Many of them will go on a visit and they come and listen, but that's it, isn't it? But then you have some that become so dedicated. They want to go on and do more. And those are the ones that we now call ambassadors. And we get them to do other projects in schools, in the local community. And when we do events like the Holocaust and Memorial Day, they come and help out and they get involved. And they are obsessed, some of these people. They can't stop them. And then what's more, many of them go on to further education. I've got one girl, Imogen. She's now doing a doctorate at the Royal Holloway. And she's now taking lectures in Birmingham University. She's actually lecturing already. But she's still a student herself. So you get these dedicated people, and they are the ambassadors, yes. The ambassador program.
And they, in turn, will train the next generation.
Well, we hope so. I mean, that trust has been relying on survivors so much. The Holocaust Centre, not so much. At least they've got a centre, they've got an exhibition, they've got all these dignitaries coming to speak and different events. Well, the trust hasn't got that. All they've got is an office. But they have got a big following in Parliament because some of the trustees are MPs and lords. Lord Hunt was vice president, and some of them died. But we've got new lords coming up and people coming up from government. My son decided that for my 90th birthday, he would try and get me to attend Prime Minister's Question Time. Now, I've been around Westminster all the time because that's where we had our meetings, but I've never been to Prime Minister's Question Time. So he asked Karen at Het, at the Holocaust Educational Trust, and he applied for tickets, got the tickets. So we toddled off and we met the speaker whom I met before, but I've been there before, and then we went to Prime Minister's Question Time. We had a really lovely seats in the gallery and looking down. And there was Prime Minister's Question Time. One MP got up and asked questions. The next MP got up and started speaking about me. And I thought, what on earth is going on? Of course, I had no idea. And so he got up and he said, mentioned my name, it's my birthday, and I've been doing all this work, and I'm in the gallery. And I didn't know what I was supposed to do, so I just stood up. And as I stood up, the whole house started to applaud, and all the people in the gallery. And, of course, all the media picked it up everywhere, not just in this country, in New York, in Boston, all over, and had messages from all over, because it never happened before. It was something that never happens in Parliament. They never acknowledge people up in the gallery, in the public gallery. It's what it says, out of convention or something. I've got the Hansard. It's actually mentioned in the Hansard, which was quite weird, wasn't it? And of course, all the reporters were there because it was Prime Minister's Question Time. That's how all the media picked it up. So, and who did it? Het actually got one MP to try and do that, and they didn't know what they'd come off, because you never know what happens Prime Minister Question Time, do you? How it'll go. But yes, he did. He stood up and spoke, and it was and paid his tribute. So it was really lovely.
You get some government funding, and
only I think only for I think they get something for teacher training and for the LFA, but not for the outreach program.
Therefore, school. The rest of it relies upon.
We fundraise all the time. We have annual dinners where quite a lot of money is, you know, we've got good sponsors, you know, like BP, you know, some of the big companies. Lord Brown, who was at BP, he started the fundraising at BP. So you have got these some big industrial people that have come forward and are funding.
A couple of times you've mentioned moments where you've been faced with people who are not interested or disbelieved. Oh, yeah, go back to the early days of when you came to England.
Oh, yes.
Nobody wanted to know. Mm. And then you mentioned the visitors that went with you, the neo-Nazis, as it were, that went with you. Mm. Do you think there is still a fear that people can say, oh, this didn't happen?
There is a real problem. Yes, there's a denial problem, isn't it? I've done some programs, I didn't even mention it, I did some programs with some of these deniers, not with Irving, but with others, the National Front people. They know they're talking a load of rubbish, but many of them make a living. That Irving, when he came unstuck, you see, when he tried to do that with this Deborah Lipstadt, and he lost the case. But you know something, he's 78 and he's still going strong and he's still got followers. He's still up there in Scotland somewhere.
Why do you think it is that people...
Well, he knows very well it's true. Listen, we've got tons and tons of documentation. I mean, it wasn't easy to get the documentation because when the Russians liberated Auschwitz, what did they do? They took everything to Russia, everything, all the documents and things. It wasn't until the fall of communism that people could go there into the archives and bring stuff back. I mean, there's plenty of visual stuff that you can see. If you go outside Lublin to Majdanek, the camp, you can see the gas on the walls. There's a gas chamber there in Majdanek. And if you look at it, you can see all blue remnants of gas, you know, of Cyclone B gas. It's there for everyone to see. So he knows pretty well. And now he's supported by some people. Don't ask me who, but he is. So you do get these people, don't know who they are.
So in this sense, the ambassador program, which the Holocaust Educational Trust has developed, is actually very important because it helps the next generation to combat the denial. Because as time goes on, there will be a temptation that,
people try to rewrite history. It happens all the time. History repeats. That's the problem, isn't it? That's why we're doing all that work. We're not doing it just to remember. We're doing it to protect the future. That's what it's all about. We live in the most uncertain world at the moment. I mean, 20, 30 years ago, I thought things wouldn't happen. But now I'm not so sure. Quite honestly, we've got no guarantee. And you have to know. And, you know, that these generations have missed out. Like this Irving, he was probably a generation that missed out, didn't he? So that's why it's important. It's to protect the future, really. Because, from my experience, there's nothing worse than not knowing. If you're confronted with something and you know, you can act. But if you don't know, you're completely finished. And that's what happened to the Hungarian Jews. They had no idea. You know, in the ghettos, we already knew that bad things are happening. And that's why my father tried to escape. Well, if you didn't know, you were finished. And this is the situation today. People have to not just know, they have to understand. And it's not easy, is it? It's a difficult thing to understand. But that's essential, I think.
Kitty Hart-Moxon, thank you very much indeed.
Well, I've done too much, probably.
No, not at all. Not at all.